Recording this program, and then we will be sending out the recording as well as the case to all of you, and then it also is going to be sent on our website boardoptions.com. I would like to introduce the author of the case, David Karofsky. David's a principal consultant with the Family Business Consulting Group, and I think the name says it all. Prior to working with the Family Business Consulting Group, David worked with his own family business, and that was David and his father, Paul, who was extremely well known in this area for working with family businesses. The father-son team actually wrote a book called So You're in the Family Business, A Guide to Sustainability. But David's career not only includes family businesses, he was vice president of marketing for a software startup. He helped launch the company and raised over $10 million in funding. David also served at EMC for 8 years. His roles included managing operations for EMC Worldwide Marketing. So David, I want to turn it over to you. I have a list of the different groups and who was in which group. So if you want to know who was in what group, we can do that. Or you can just talk to people.
Yep. So I think, thank you, Larry, very much. And thanks for the opportunity to be able to sit and chat about this. I can kind of go a lot of different ways. If we want to do some Q&A and if we want to use some of the features of Zoom, and if people want to raise their hand in the participants thing and do that, we can do that. So I'm happy to answer questions if that would help, or we can just open it up to comments. However, you know, you've got more experience than I do, Larry, doing this. So however we want to do it, my guess is I'm sure people have some questions. So why don't we just open it up for some Q&A first. And maybe go into the participant section and raise your hand, and then I will just call on you and let's ask some questions that way.
Anyone have questions about the case?
Would you stay or go?
Oh, there we go. George Gorman, go ahead, unmute yourself and then just state your question.
Yeah, so we talked about the case, but one of the questions we came up with, you know, recognizing that we didn't have all the information, was the very tiny role that Denise has in all this. And that was one. And was there any chance that she and Mike, if they could agree on anything, could convince Scott to get some help?
So we talked a lot about that. And you know, Denise, from an ownership perspective, had a very small role, obviously. But from a family perspective, she was in a very strong position because both Mike and Scott confided in her a lot. She was as close to a neutral as you could be. She was the oldest. She's the oldest. She was the older sister, then Scott, and then Mike. So, you know, it's weird. Birth order actually plays a very powerful role sometimes in family business. And as the older sister, she came on the board just a few years ago to really help her father deal with her brothers. That's why she was even on the board. She doesn't really have a business background. She's in HR now at a fairly peripheral point. She would argue differently, but it still is. She's really an academic. She's a professor at a university in the Georgia area, but she does some HR and recruiting stuff on the side. In any case, to really answer your question, we have tried to do that to have Mike and Scott, you know, Michael say left, Scott says right. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And so, you know, if Mike said, I want you to get help, the only way Scott would get help is if Mike said, I don't want you to get any help, right? Don't do anything, don't get any help. Then Scott would go and get help, right? That's the way it was.
That's what we kind of figured that's the way it was.
Denise tried to play that role. But there are some trust issues there, and Scott kind of assumed that maybe she was speaking for Mike in that scenario. You know, he needs the help. There's no question. One of the things I was telling my group is Scott is now, his wife has filed for divorce in the last 6 months. He's been kicked out of his house. He's not seeing his kids really much at all right now. And his addiction issues have gotten worse in both, you know, drinking and he smokes a lot of marijuana daily, you know, multiple times a day. So he's kind of on this spiral. If you're in that situation, and for those of you that are familiar with addiction, you can offer all the help in the world that you want, but if that person isn't willing to receive the help and do something to help themselves, it's really difficult to do that. And that's where they are right now. So Denise has a little bit of leverage to answer your question, but not a ton in this case.
Okay. Sort of what we expected.
Yeah, exactly. Dorian, if you can just unmute yourself.
Hi, David. So it was interesting. In our group, we were talking, and this is not very dissimilar to a couple of the experiences I had with companies that I've ran in the family environment. So answering the direct question, should I stay or should I go? I'm hoping you're not Gary in this play. And I'm hoping that Gary or Denise brought you in to help them make sense out of what's going on. I've seen this play out where outside help wasn't enlisted, an independent board wasn't created, and eventually an independent CEO and professional management was not brought in to the business. And you know, that scenario looks at a company that's going to self-destruct within the next 3 to 5 years. So,
So a couple of things. I'm not Gary in this situation. Gary is the father's, one of his oldest best friends from 50 years together. He joined the board about 10 years ago to help Jeff, the father, deal with his two sons. So I'm not. I was actually hired about a month and a half before Jeff passed away. Jeff's demise, unfortunately, it was so sad. I mean, this is like classic 2020. I mean, he literally was healthy. He went into the hospital to get a stent, couldn't do it. They had to do a quadruple bypass, and he died within 2 weeks. I mean, it was like a month window. So there was no preparation, that they couldn't rewrite the shareholder agreement, which clearly needs to be written. It's one of the most poorly written shareholder agreements I've ever read in my life. They couldn't do any of that while in preparation for Jeff's passing. And so I was brought in proactively to deal with all these family issues. But as soon as Jeff passed, everything just did a complete 180, and I wasn't able to really do the work that I was hired to do, which was help bring the family together. I was now in triage mode because the passing of Jeff created the opportunity for Mark and Scott to really butt heads because of the way the shareholders agreement, it was forcing them an agreement, which they just were incapable of doing. That never would have happened had Jeff not passed away, and I would have been able to more elegantly deal with the case.
So now, you know, I mean, again, having seen this happen in real life, either the family is going to spend millions of dollars fighting each other legally, or somehow they get some sense talked into them early on, and they do create they almost put the company not in receivership as in the sense of bankruptcy, but just letting some professional management run the day-to-day business until sort of the family crisis disappear and gets worked out separately.
Yep.
Anything short of that is going to have pretty bad implications for the company. I'm assuming that there is dependency between the manufacturing and the retail. So you can't really talk about splitting the two businesses and one buying out the other as a solution.
You could actually. There's dependence on the manufacturing side, less dependence on the retail side. They do sell that product, but it's one of several products. It only represents probably 20% of their revenue, which is still significant, obviously, but not crippling. And
margin wise, I mean, from a valuation perspective, would be the two being valued the same?
No, not even close.
Okay.
Not even
the retail. Close. The retail is a lot richer then.
Significantly more.
So then, you know, an agreement would have to be made that one needs to buy out the other, and that share.
Correct.
And Denise get paid.
Yep.
But the sooner, in my opinion, and I think that, you know, the group that we talked to sort of, we came along the same way. The sooner you get to that, the least amount of value you destroy for the business.
Yeah, and that's where we're trying to go. Yeah, good point there.
Good luck.
Peter Sherlock.
So I think we'll get into a lot of discussion about what to do next. I was really curious, though. Jeff doesn't seem like a dummy. What was behind this shareholder? Why did it end up the way it is? It seems on the face of it, just a recipe for dysfunction.
Fear, you know, fear is what drove him. Fear of losing his kids, you know, fear of creating, you know, conflict, which obviously was creating. The shareholder agreement was really written in the eye of Jeff, that Jeff had all the power. When Jeff was alive, no decision, as the case says, right, no major decision could really be made unless Jeff was agreeing with the decision. So the board was, you know, you guys all know boards well enough. The board was perfunctory. It really wasn't serving a purpose other than it was just there perception-wise. But you couldn't do anything without the board. Jeff felt that this provision, in the event that he dies, would force Mike and Scott together to maybe try and bring them together, but it was unable to do. And the lawyer, in my opinion, should have been able to see that, and should have, you know, this agreement was written 10 years ago. The writing was on the wall. This should have been changed. It's just they never got around to doing it. Yeah. Al.
David, it obviously the problems are not just business oriented, they're personal oriented too. I mean, Scott's got some serious problems. And it might, you know, family therapy before business therapy. Is there a mom around? Is Jeff's wife?
So you were breaking up a little bit there.
She passed away, and does she have influence over the kids at all?
So mom is still alive. She unfortunately doesn't have much influence over her kids. She just wants everyone to get along, and she's going to stay out of it. So there isn't a lot of leverage. God knows I tried, but there is not a lot of leverage there with her. In the case, the only motivation the kids have is they're really motivated to make sure that she is taken care of financially. And so they've done those provisions to make sure that that's okay. But other than that, mom doesn't have a lot of leverage in this case.
And so a family intervention would be out of the question to get her to appeal to her.
They've done it.
Her children. They've tried it. Okay.
They did it. They did an intervention. They did they did it with, you know, like an AA intervention, a full on, they had someone there, and it just completely backfired on them. And Scott was unwilling and unable to even come to the table and have a discussion about it. Larry Putterman.
Hello, David. How you doing?
I'm good, Larry. How are you? Nice to see you.
Good to see you. My question is, when we were discussing it in our group, was what kind of relationship does Gary have with the kids?
So Gary's known the kids since they were, you know, babies. And he came into the board to really help Dad out, as I had said. And he's incredibly bright, incredibly successful, in his own right, has done very, very well. So he's respected by them. And Gary's a no BS kind of a guy, and he shoots straight. So the kids will rely on him for advice. But when the advice doesn't match what they want, he's dead to them. And this has been their culture, and there's been no accountability for that attitude brought forth. And so I've seen both brothers have incredibly positive conversations with him. And then the next day, something happens and Gary calls him on it. And, you know, next thing you know, there they, you know, Scott in particular will rip Gary apart verbally. I mean, just the poor guy, just destroy him verbally. And it's almost manic level. It's that up and down.
So why does Gary stay?
That's the question I'm asking. You tell me, why does Gary stay?
I'm not going to answer that.
Why does Gary stay? And does he feel any responsibility for the wife?
That's pieces of it. Go ahead, Larry.
So what about Mike's running $85 million and Scott's only running $20 million? Couldn't he just buy out his brother, or
if his
brother doesn't want to give in? He just
doesn't want to give in, and then there's a lot of real estate attached to the retail properties, as you know, in many retail situations, right? You own the retail and the real estate. The real estate's a big factor here, and Scott doesn't want to give in. Scott doesn't want to let Mike win. And he'll spite his own self in case of that. So let me jump to some other people. Robin, I know you've been waiting, so you've got some thoughts.
Yeah, they're not just my thoughts, they're the group's thoughts. So if either Lucia or Greg want to jump in, that's great. We looked at the questions at the end, and I'll be honest, I started with the last question, and my answer was go. I could not possibly imagine why you would want to stay in this situation. It just seems so awful. And so we also thought, obviously, there is the possibility to sell the business before the business were to depreciate in value. And we think that's important and certainly works to everyone's self-interest. So that's something to speak to the brothers about. One of the options is to try and get some sort of professional mediator in to explain to them that to work really together would benefit each other as well as themselves. So again, you're appealing to their own interest as opposed to saying that this is something they were doing for the other brother. You want to definitely explain to them that they don't wish to destroy value. Their father worked for 50 years to create this company. And that though the sister has a de minimis role in the company, I mean, they do have a responsibility to the sister, who is also a shareholder, as well as now we find out to mom. And we were also wondering whether it was possible to separate out the divisions possibly. You know, I know that the gentleman right before me was speaking about that, but if it were possible so that they each felt they had their own little fiefdom so that they didn't have to interact, maybe that was a solution. Not really sure. And then finally, one of the points that was raised is, you know, there's this throwaway paragraph that talks about the $2 million that dad loaned that supposedly was a business expense. To the best of our knowledge, based upon this fact pattern, it was never legally forgiven. And if in this case, is it Scott who has the loan, David?
Yes.
So if, you know, it's Scott who has the loan, Scott who has the addiction problem, is it possible if you can't appeal to his better nature to try and take better care of himself? Is there a way to force him by saying that if you don't take better care of yourself, we're going to call the loan and you're going to have to pay it, and sort of, you know, push him a little bit? I don't really know. But that was something that we had thought about.
Yep. All really good stuff, Robin. I'm going to hold off on some of that because I think my guess is Larry's going to want me to kind of tell you what's actually going on at the end. So I'm going to hold off on some of that because I don't want to spoil it, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure.
Really good thoughts. Anthony.
Question.
Yeah, Tony. Hello, David. How are you? Tony.
Good.
Hey, just curious. Did the whole family hire you? It was a good piece of information that you were hired before. Was that a collective decision?
Yes, it was a collective decision that everybody, the only way I was going to get hired was that everybody, actually, I made everybody sign the agreement, which is kind of unusual. Sometimes I don't. But in this case, given the dynamics, I needed everybody to sign the agreement of me working. And part of the agreement was no one person could fire me in the engagement, because there was a history of Scott in particular getting mad and just firing somebody, and then it would kill it. And I made them all sign a provision that no one person could fire me. If they wanted to fire me, they all had to agree to fire me.
And the objectives were clear. I mean, you were coming, what you were coming in for was laid out. So, I mean, they knew that this was a serious venture. Meaning,
absolutely. And they were in. I mean, they were all in. And then, like I said, just everything took a 180 when Jeff passed away. I mean, it really derailed everything.
Yeah. And two other quick questions. One is, did the father impart any knowledge to you that you have sort of the inside track on what he would have liked to pursue had he not passed away? In other words, do you have insider information on what the family thought would have been, his thought?
The answer is I did. He had his wish of what he wanted to happen, but he didn't have the emotional strength to follow through with what he really wanted. What he really wanted was Scott out of the business altogether, let Mike run the company, Denise be involved. We would have going to put together a fully functioning independent board of directors and you know, let Scott, you know, buy him out of his shares and let him just go on his way. But he never could have done it. And Scott at one point was even holding his own children, Jeff's grandchildren, as leverage, saying, if you ever do something like that, you'll never see your grandkids again. I mean, it got that wow. Spirit.
So the last thing is, while this drama is going on, is there a strong second tier of management that keeps this business afloat?
Yeah, the CFO is a non-family. He's the CFO, COO, thank God, because he's a non-family and he is gold. And without him, they really would be up a creek. is still there. And so the answer is yes, incredibly strong management team.
Right, so at least that gives you some leeway to try to
yeah.
Some time. Yeah.
That's correct. All right. Lots of comments here. Good stuff. So let me just get to Robert Johnson.
Question, and I'll tell you what Tony and I decided, and Mindy was with us as well, although she had some connectivity issues. What's the value of this business? Any idea, roughly? Exit value?
You know, they hadn't done a formal valuation yet on it. You know, they were throwing around somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 3 to 5 times revenue. They're not sure. I mean, they were throwing around some really big numbers. But they hadn't done a formal valuation yet.
So is your best guess that the exit value of this business might be several hundred million? Is that real in your view?
No.
Okay.
So the one thing I've learned, Robert, in family business is every family thinks their business is worth a hell of a lot more than it really is.
Absolutely. So what we talked about was, we're not ready to throw in the towel yet. That's kind of, let's call it a secondary step. One thought we had was if we could convince the brothers to make Gary, the interim chair, it would put us in a position to be able to pursue a few things, potentially some external help for, let's call it, family counseling / intervention. Knowing what you just said about the CFO, COO is good. We're also thinking about, you know, now that you're in this situation, if you guys can't get along and somehow agree to basically the operational terms of agreement, get it into the weeds pretty quickly, you know, what's this business going to look like in a few years? We also talked about, and we don't want to be the arbiter. We really wanted somebody else to be the arbiter, if you will. We also talked about enlisting the sister with her, let's call it her 2% share, to get a majority for a decision. And then lastly, we talked about options, including exit, et cetera, just because this is a mess, and it's probably going to continue to be a mess for a while from a governance standpoint.
So I had my internet got messed up, but one of the questions that we had right out of the box was, why did the sister get 2%? What did she get instead of the interest in this business?
So,
that was kind of like, hello.
Yeah, it was, a few of you brought that up. So when the shareholder agreement was written about 10 years ago, the sister was not working in the business. She was not involved whatsoever. She was down teaching classes and whatnot in Georgia. And there was enough assets outside of the business that the plan was that dad was going to take care of his daughter with other assets outside of the business and let those who are working in the business, which is not uncommon, by the way, in family businesses, let the assets of the business go to those who are running it, take care of others with other assets. And so that was the original plan. And then it's not happening. She now has her 2%. And she's obviously feeling incredibly marginalized, as you can imagine, in that situation. But that was the original premise. It didn't play out that way.
Let me exercise my role as timekeeper. It's 6:20. Yeah. We have 10 more minutes. I want to make sure that David sort of tells us what actually happened.
Okay, so there are some few more. I apologize, I can't get to it. Let me tell you what happened, and then let's see where we go from there, Larry. Does that work timing-wise?
Sure.
So, I was brought in right at the end of 2019. I did what I usually do as an engagement is I do a discovery. So I do all my interviews and all my collection and all that stuff. And I did the discovery. I interviewed Jeff, who at the time was feeling healthy. I interviewed mom, I interviewed the kids, I interviewed key stakeholders, I interviewed the whole board, Gary, and so on and so forth. The most common theme in every single interview was, if something happens to Jeff, we have a real problem because of the way the agreement's written and whatnot. I'm like, I understand, you know, I said, I can understand that, not knowing what was gonna happen. And lo and behold, I finished the discovery. I hadn't even given my feedback yet. And I get the call that Jeff was going to the hospital, bypass, et cetera, et cetera. So the feedback meeting got delayed because they were focusing on dad, obviously, and dad ends up dying. And so everything immediately took a change. Where they are now is in the infighting, as soon as dad, I mean, we're talking days, you know, that the father passes away, the infighting between Mike and Scott really takes off. And it becomes a power play because Scott is now chairman of the board. And Scott is trying to throw his weight around as chairman of the board. And Mike is basically dismissing any and everything that his brother is saying, which just infuriates him. And they have a history of physical altercations here. So what ended up happening was Scott got to the point where he was verbally abusive of not only Gary and his brother and sister, but of employees. And if the CFO, COO wouldn't do what Scott wanted, Scott said, well, then you're fired. Even though he really didn't have the right to fire him, he couldn't do that. He would just do it. And he would do it to the head of marketing, and he did it to the head of manufacturing. And he was just walking around kind of going off the rails. And finally, it got to the point where the board suspended Scott from any and all operational roles in the business. And they had the ability to do that. So if the 14 points didn't say anything about suspension. And so they basically kind of overruled on that piece on the agreement side, and they suspended him, and he is including a restraining order. And he cannot step foot in the facilities whatsoever and can't have any engagement at all. That's been happening now for about 6 months. The business recovered from COVID quite well. You know, the first several months they took a real hit, as many did obviously, but they have rebounded well. The board is now at a point where it's still quite dysfunctional, but we are moving to negotiations to try and buy Scott out of the business. The businesses can't function on their own. So what they're trying to do is, because the manufacturing business has two major partners, one of which is the retail division of the family, and one is a significant other partner that represents about 50% of the manufacturing facilities business. So they could, in theory, survive without the family side of the business. So they're trying to buy him out at a value plus to try and do a little bit of an equalization of his shares of the 49% that he owns in the retail division. One of the sticking points that we still have not worked through is the real estate. The retail owns a vast majority, not all, but a vast majority of the real estate of which the retail sits on. And Scott still wants ownership in the real estate. But there's no way that Mike will ever have his brother as a landlord. And I completely advise about that, because that's a huge mistake, because it doesn't create a clean separation. They're still in bed together, and we need to really completely separate any and all business relationships. So that's where we are right now in the negotiations of trying to facilitate this buyout. The CFO, COO has agreed to actually become an equity partner with Mike in the retail division of the business. So now they've got more financial leverage in that agreement, and that's what they're trying to do. And the sister will also go with them and basically completely separate the manufacturing business altogether. And Scott can do whatever he wants with it. And they will have a partnership agreement, but it's not in perpetuity. And there are some binding components to it that if in the event that manufacturing fails to deliver on the expectations, they can sever the partnership. So at least they're not completely tied to them. So that's where we are. Larry, questions, go ahead and fire away, whatever. Yeah,
does anybody have any questions for David in terms of what actually happened?
Ingrid.
My question was a little bit more of a, could you have had Scott declared incompetent if his addiction or some of the challenges that you just described, where there'd be a way to be able to legally, you know, make it so that he was unable to stay in a leadership role anymore?
So the answer is yes. They have that option. They haven't gone down that road, but boy, we certainly have discussed it. They are fearful of him. He has made physical threats to them, and so there's definitely a little bit of
I was curious why they didn't have security in the boardroom, and that's not a joke. Like, given what you just described about the physical altercation, I thought, I wonder why they don't have a security guard in the room.
You know, I'm 6'3" and I'm 225, and so, you know, that's the closest thing they're going to get to security.
Well, a random punch could hit anybody, so I'd hate that to see you get a black eye over that. So
I do have a glass chin.
Nice. Anybody else have any questions for David?
I have a question.
Yes.
Let's have two more questions, then wrap it up.
Scott's behavioral and addiction issues notwithstanding, how is his company doing from a P&L point of view?
They are breaking even. Not great. They are breaking even. They are financially dependent on the retail. It's kind of, they take from Peter and give to Paul, right? One hand, left hand, right hand pocket. And it has been that way for years. And under Jeff, under the dad was fine with it. It's okay. It's my son's pet project in manufacturing, and it's got some pretty cool stuff. And, you know, it's okay. We'll fund it out of this business, because this business was, you know, the margins were so high and it was a cash cow. They were able to fund the other piece. That's not going to happen if they split.
Got it. Mm-hmm. That's really important to know.
One more question. Anybody? Mindy?
What about his addiction, and sort of, does he have a wife and children where that they would want him to get into rehab? I mean, it sounds like he's out there beating up the world, but, you know, what has happened with that? mean, that's so very sad.
It's very sad. I agree with you. His wife, she filed for divorce in May because of that and the verbal abuse that he was giving to her, unfortunately. He has two kids. One is in college. One is a senior in high school. And they would love for him to get help. But his wife needed to take other precautions for herself and her kids. So that's where it is. And I agree, very, very difficult.
On that note, we're going to conclude. And I want to thank David very much for participating and writing such an involving case. So thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
Pleasure. This was great.
Thank you, David.
Yes, David. Great.
Thanks, David.
We usually meet on the last Thursday of the month, but next month, the last Thursday of the month is Thanksgiving, and we've wisely decided not to compete with your turkey dinners. So the next November, the November Seat at the Table program will be on the 19th of November. On Monday, you'll be getting an email from Marianne and me inviting you to that program. Ari Brish is going to be writing a case, and the title, I think, explains what the case is about, which is A Founder Blackmails the Board of Directors. I'm sure you've never heard of anything like that in your lives.
Love it.
But we want to thank you for your participation. Probably by Friday in a week, this program will be on boardoptions.com, so you can download it and listen and pass it on to your friends. So thank you very much for your time, your involvement, and your passion and your knowledge. Take care.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Bye.
Thank you, David.
Bye, everyone.